Welcome to the Owner to Owner podcast with your host, Jesse Tyler, part of the EO Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Owner to Owner podcast. This is Jesse Tyler, your host. Well, we usually feature the rank and file as we look around the ESOP and employee ownership community for different voices and perspectives. What we'd like to do today, give a shout out to the NCEO, the National Center for Employee Ownership, and their recent conference in Kansas City. It was a total blast and a really meaningful experience. Joining me today for a little bit of a Q&A and discussion is Brett Kiesling. He produces the Owner to Owner podcast. This grew out of a friendship, having met at a ESOP conference and been a fan of the EO podcast network. And the Owner to Owner grew out of Brett putting a card onto LinkedIn saying, I'm looking for an owner to talk to owners. And I'm appreciative of the experience, many episodes, and having the leeway and support to poke around and try to bring voices you would never usually hear in the ownership world and bring them to a larger audience. So potential sellers of their company can hear the voices of somebody they care about and say, you know, maybe I should look into this ownership thing a little bit more. And then for the peers in the community that maybe don't get to travel for whatever reason and don't get to go to conferences, they can hear people like them and hear different ways of talking about ownership. Maybe listen to it in the break room. I have folks at work who listen to it when they're working. So it's just been a real joy. So Brett, welcome aboard to a slightly different episode of Owner to Owner.
Jesse, thank you so much for having me. I kind of feel like we got this great crossover going on. The ESOP podcast visits the Owner to Owner podcast. Gotta tell you, you and almost 2,000 other people spent several days with the NCEO in Kansas City, Missouri. And I wasn't able to attend the conference this year, but I was following it all on social media. And I got to tell you, Jesse, it felt like the cool kids were at the party. You know, I was going back to my junior high wallflower days. I'm watching all this stuff. The session seemed amazing. The keynote seemed amazing. The pictures from downtown, I saw a lot of pictures at Arrowhead Field, you know, where there, I guess there was a tour going on at certain points where the Chiefs play. It seemed like an amazing experience.
Yeah, it was great. So just to start with the city, I used to travel a lot, and I'm not actually sure if I've ever been to Kansas City, but if I had, the current Kansas City is pretty impressive. It was just beautiful, safe, great food, easy to get around. The conference hall that the NCEO picked was fantastic, very nice venue. It was a large group of people. There were almost 2,000 of us there, so there's a fair amount of opportunities to get your steps between some of the halls, but it was bright, clean, and it was also, this isn't what you're supposed to talk about from a conference, but it was the best food I've ever had at a conference, which when you have a conference and the food's terrible, that's unfortunately a disproportionate memory. So it was all around. High five to Jamie and her team at NCEO. It was just incredibly smooth, very thoughtful agenda. And then the way the pacing was, there was more room between sessions for social time. And it was funny because some people were getting impatient, like, no, they should have more sessions. And some of us were arguing the time in between the sessions is the conference. The other stuff we could just watch on a webinar. Let's mix mingle, you know, meet some of the providers that help power, you know, EO and the nonprofits. So just across the board, it was a lot of fun. It was really well done. Really well done.
And Jesse, if we can kind of get down to business a little bit, you picked up some stuff that you learned at the conference. There were some things that you found very meaningful, and they're kind of in a general category that you'll talk about. And then we've got some regarding education specifically. And then there's a session that I think a lot of people, I won't be subjective and say the best session, but a really important session that involved mental health and burnout and that sort of thing. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. How about you kick us off, Jesse? You have some general impressions and things you picked up at the conference.
Yeah. And so as listeners are probably familiar with, or new listeners, just letting you know that my fascination, I had sort of a bit of a quiet epiphany at the conference that 16 years of fascination with ownership culture, I'm fascinated by the most fragile part of employee ownership. So you have this, you know, security, wealth building, long-term gain, retirement plan and benefit. And I love that. I've been at a successful ESOP for 16 years. I'm on a different trajectory than I would be. I'm on a very different trajectory than my parents ever were. All of that is fantastic. I'm appreciative of that, but I'm most fascinated by the nuance of what does it feel like day to day in the culture. And culture, you can't tell culture. You can't teach culture. People have to feel it, absorb it, and feel it in themselves and let it out. And so that's the focus area So I'm not going to mention anything about some of the great track they had on some of the financial, legal, and others. It's really going to be about training and then the cultural nuances. So if that's of interest to you, then keep on listening. There are a couple of things that I just found. I find myself now, you know, a week later, just thinking about a lot. It was a comment about specific to training and the experience of learning, which I think as much as the workplace is changing and evolving now, and are still really, I believe, not even close to figuring that out. As somebody who spends 300 hours or so in a classroom every year, leadership development, communication, confidence in presenting, and then onboarding around 200 people a year with a big onboarding program, I was really struck by the caution of beware of the motions of engagement, where you can have an experience, you can have a learning event where there's lots of activities and lots of interaction, but that doesn't mean that the learners are engaged in learning. And I just thought that was a really healthy gut check for me and anyone else who does so much facilitating, so much training. I talked about it with my wife, Barbara, who's a special education teacher. It's relevant in the public schools. So that was something that really stuck with me. And I think it's going to shift just that one comment that actually was made by an audience member making a reference to their experience. So I didn't get their name. So I try to give credit with these notes where I can. But it was one of those things. You go to a conference, you don't know what to expect. Keep an open mind and you can have how you work be impacted. So beware of motions of engagement. And then the other one was watch out for the illusion that communication has occurred. There's so much talk in general workplaces now, definitely in ESOPs, of, you know, meaningful communication, the cadence, the access, the inclusion, and all of that. And I just thought it was a wonderful, I might put it across the top of my computer, is watch out for the illusion that communication has occurred. You know, I shared something with you and it was totally clear. It doesn't mean somebody in operations even opened the email and knows what it means, you know, that it's accessible.
So you're talking about identifying that and figuring out what tools you can use to bring them into the fold to make sure that their participation actually has impact for them, and in turn will impact the presentation itself better if everybody's more engaged.
Yeah. It's, you know, I was taught or found along the way, you know, check for understanding. And I think that still is relevant, but it needs an updating. But it's, you know, just because, you know, you have the setting, you've conveyed it, and it was done in a thoughtful, meaningful way. I think part of, for me, what resonated, maybe this is a more personal reaction to that and why I keep thinking about it, is that I think, and it's something I talked about in one of my sessions, is I did a session on recruiting, retention, onboarding, engagement, to share what my team does, what I do and my team. They all contributed and had a really neat discussion. And I also did a session to support Praxis and Jenny Masal about financial literacy. But I brought it up in my presentation where I think that we have an undulating or maybe a missing acceptance that we're in a time of a mental health crisis. And this isn't an ESOP thing. This is, I think, my personal belief is a global thing. I was a school board chair for 5 years, recently hung up my hat. It was an interesting battle within the school district, because trying to say, you know, there's a mental health crisis, and then someone say, no, everybody's fine. Well, they're not fine. So if you could get agreement that the kids aren't doing well for the obvious reasons, not make this about COVID, why do we think the parents and the grandparents raising them are fine? Why would I think when I go to the facilities, the hypertherm associates, that everybody's fine? Like, we've been through something significant. And I think in my experience with interacting with a lot of people for a lot of time every week, as what I do for my company, I just don't think people have more than a quarter of a tank right now. And I think that's highly relevant to bring us back to that point of watch out for the illusion that communication has occurred. People might really mean to be present and mean to be listening, but they might be so overwhelmed by what's going on at home, or so exhausted from this time in history from the last three plus years now, that I think we got to be really careful that as well as we do it and as careful as we do it, it doesn't mean we broke through. And I don't know how to fix that, but it's just something that's really, I just keep thinking about it, and it's going to change how I facilitate and teach.
So Jesse, a lot of the mental health, and I love that this was a focus at the conference, and in a little bit we'll talk about Dallin Gazinski's presentation that was wonderful, but I think it's so important, and a lot of it ties into multiple factors. So for example, burnout at the office and getting downtime, et cetera, et cetera. And I think you've had some reflections or learned some things regarding that.
Yeah, it was really interesting. With Dallin, did a fantastic job. He put himself out there and shared his own experience in a really amazing way. And it was excellent. I applaud Dallin and NTO for willing to go there about mental health, and I applaud Dallin how he handled it and engaged us in that journey. And one of the things that I shared right away with, you know, my company was in being intentional about how teams prepare for absenteeism. So, you know, it's even more magnified as you're looking at the news where layoffs are increasing, the banking is shaking, manufacturing in the US is drooping, was the word I saw yesterday in one of the papers. You know, there's a time of concern. You know, the example that he gave is, you know, it sounds like, you know, somebody saying, I'm the only one who does X work. I can't really take a vacation. And so then they keep going, but then they'll leave or burn out. And if they burn out and stay, but that's just as that can be as devastating to a company than somebody, or maybe more so than somebody leaving. And so the advice that really resonated was, you know, it sounds simple, it sounds easy. I'm not sharing this out because I think it is, but it's, you know, being more intentional in these times about work distribution so that turnover, and I think personally even more magnified that needs to be appreciated, is life's challenges don't end up tipping a team. And it's, you know, you talk about silos, eliminating silos at work, but I think we're dealing with a much bigger risk where people might be showing up, but they might only have a quarter in the tank. And then if they get to that true burnout and they're in that sort of panic and loneliness and they're still showing up, it can be desperately risky for the rest of the team, the culture, and the output. So again, kudos for NCEO for being willing to have a session that would look it right in the eye and talk about mental health. I think it's something that's important. And Dallin asked for my contribution, and I shared, you know, my pride with, you know, Hypertherm being in a recovery friendly workplace, because you cannot talk about recovery without acknowledging mental health and anxiety. They are inseparable. And so I think for the companies that are getting on the bandwagon with recovery friendly workplace, it's the right thing to do. It feels good. But what it does is it puts a stake in the ground to say that we acknowledge mental health is a part of the employee experience. And we are finding, whether it's finding our way or have a set plan, it's the idea that you're signaling your workers that they matter, and we're gonna try to figure out a way to support you. So,
and that, Jesse, directly impacts retention, turnover rates, and the metrics that employee-owned companies tend to do much better than non-employee-owned companies. But there's a direct correlation to that.
Yeah, thanks for asking it that way. Because what I was nosing around and asking, because, you know, we're in our 21st year of employee ownership. We were 100% in 2013, and so everyone agrees that that jump to 100% for those of us lucky to experience that is a really big deal. But then what I was doing is sort of networking. I chronically talk to strangers, but networking and building connections. But I was just asking really sort of self-serving, curious questions. And one of them, I was really interested in where turnover metrics for those that are focusing on them, there are significant drivers. Very hard to hire. And even now when people leave, there's lots of tightening budgets where people might not be replaced quickly. And I was really surprised. Again, this is not a data set. This isn't like a Thomas Dudley from Certified Employee Owned, who's a data genius. It's not that, or some of the NCO content. This is me just talking to people at a conference. But it didn't sound like ESOPs consistently share the retention and turnover metrics. And I don't remember who said this, so I can't give credit again. I apologize. But somebody was suggesting that the turnover and retention metrics should be taught to every single person who works at the company and say, collectively, you need to help us go find more machine operators. Collectively, we need to kind of take care of each other so people stay. But when somebody leaves that would have otherwise stayed, this is what it costs us. And the light sort of went on for me. So I actually asked my wonderful leader today about Mariah about that with, and we're going to talk about it next week, is there a potential for us to think differently about that being a way to convey ownership, as, you know, the person standing next to you and their being successful is a business imperative, and sort of translating it sort of like business financial. So that was one of my, it was an unexpected aha. And I thought that was really cool.
And Jesse, let me just play the role. You know, I too spend most of my time these days in the culture and kind of communication space of employee ownership because I just love it. But with that trustee hat on, the retention rate is really critical for profitability and business sustaining purposes. It is very expensive to recruit. It is very expensive, often with positions, to train, to get somebody up to speed, et cetera, et cetera. You make the point, I think, on just about every episode of the Owner to Owner podcast, that labor is the number one most critical issue for employee-owned companies and companies regardless of their ownership status.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And so it's one of those things where, yes, it sounds perfectly obvious when I look at my notes and say share retention and turnover metrics as a business imperative for our security. It makes perfect sense. But it's going to the conference, mixing and mingling, asking people, learning something, say, hey, I just talked to somebody over here about this. I heard this in the session. What do you think? What do you do? Can we get in touch? And that was a cool thing at the conference too. They had a very good scanning option for networking. So you could quickly add your contacts and pop them in LinkedIn. So that was a thumbs up, but it was just really interesting. And so that was something I'm asked my leader to, if we can talk about, is there a potential to sort of shift how that information is used to make the rank and file, the everyday associate, look at it a little bit differently. And so I hope something comes out of that. And then something kind of related to that was where it was, kind of the great game of business. Does every employee know their critical number? And it just made me laugh. Like, I was just thinking, like, I think we do. Like, does your company? It makes for a very interesting discussion, our machine operators might know they have to make X hundreds of parts a shift, but it's potentially a little bit broader than that. Do the functional teams like finance, HR, engineering services, do all of them? And I thought that was a great gut check for all the attendees that heard that is, if you don't have a critical number, how do you know how you're doing? How do you know how you're winning? We tend to talk about performance reviews and those things, which isn't what I'm getting into, but wouldn't it be refreshing if everybody knew your critical number and if you hit it or not? But if that was a little bit more from the, the complicated conversation right now about annual performance reviews and what that could be like for an employee experience. So that was another thing that jumped out.
And then that, Jesse, leads to, if you have everybody educated about the critical numbers, then you are better able to engage the rank and file in actual planning moving ahead because everybody has a deeper awareness.
Yeah, and Web Industries, I had the pleasure a couple of years ago to actually be invited down to their ownership day, and they did planning, and I was completely blown away when the folks that it was done out on the production floor and in different mixed teams. And basically production prioritized what they thought was the most important for the company first. And then that was fed up to the management team for consideration. And so if they all know their critical number, I don't know if Web addresses it that way, but certainly in hindsight, it looks like they did. And it's really keyed in on these are the goals from the personal level, the team level, the division level and the company level. Pretty amazing to hear what they can contribute to the planning. So I hope we can follow that lead, and I hope other ESOPs can consider, because a part of that project a few years ago, understanding participatory decision making at employee-owned companies, I did a research paper for our management team that led to interviewing Butler Till, which led to learning about problem busters, which now I've been running for years. I run global sessions. Thank you, Butler Till. You ask the folks that aren't usually asked to solve a problem, wild and amazing and startling things can happen. So
I love that.
Yeah.
So Jesse, just moving ahead a little bit, you and I have both been fortunate. I had Corey Rosen, who's the founder of the NCEO, on the ESOP podcast last September talking about his book. And just a couple of episodes ago on episode 40, you had a couple of folks come on the podcast to discuss Corey's book. And I'm just going to give it a little plug here. Ownership, Reinventing Companies, Capitalism, and Who Owns What. And you did a really fun thing. You were joined by Sarah from Admix, who's just incredible, and Tyson from Pacific Steel and Recycling to talk about the book, but you didn't tell them in advance that Corey Rosen was going to join them to talk about the book. And it was just a really fun episode, but Corey shared some knowledge, laid down some knowledge at the conference.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was great. I asked him, I said, hey, what do you think of this for this? And the other author, John Case, I talked to them in Seattle. I said, hey, if I get a couple of folks, would you hop on? And John wasn't able to attend, but I was able to read a quote that he sent for me. So, but that's the sort of classic Corey. It's like, he just helps people out. It was fun to see him at the conference in the booth, just talking to people and signing his book. It's really cool. But a couple of things to follow up on what you asked. I just loved, because I do Exploring Leadership, which is a foundational class for people considering leadership. It's a requirement before they do our Emerging Leader Program. We have a really robust leader program that my leader Mariah Become has built. And I'm sort of the driveway and the foundation, and then the rest of the team builds the house over it. But I love this quote, which I'm going to share with the class when I have them again soon, is from Corey. Humility is the most important quality of leaders in employee-owned companies, it is liberating to not have to be right all of the time. And I thought it was great because it goes at, you know, the strong leader. You know, thankfully, I think there's a fair amount of momentum that there is a vulnerability in humanness, and sometimes a leader in modern times, it can do to be the best leadership to say, you know, I don't know, what do you think? Or I don't know, let me research that and get back to you. And so I like that quote. And then he had some advice when talking about sharing and teaching about the company that's just very straightforward that I'm hoping that we can use at Hypotherm Associates as we work with Praxis and start to launch some of this financial literacy. Is from Corey, when sharing teaching about the company, half of it should be on the broader company level and half of it should be work level, but talk to everybody about sales. I thought that was a really helpful kind of fresh look at it. The money's got to come. We need to be careful to, you know, continuous improvement is the ultimate ownership behavior and culture norm. But I thought that was really good advice where keep it out there, half of it for the company and the broader view, but don't get too carried away there. Keep half of it at the work level. And I thought that was really neat. And
because then, it's so important that, you know, sales drive, and, you know, the fact of the matter is we talk all of these things on both of our podcasts and a lot of folks in the community about what makes employee-owned companies special places to work, but it needs to be a profitable company. You know, you right. need to be sustainable, you know, as a business operation.
Yeah. And I think what I like about the work level is it's the rank and file. It's the folks that maybe are out in the corners of the building in the test lab, or the technicians, or the people in the truck delivering stuff, or, you know, tech service flying somewhere to get machines working. Yeah, I think keeping it at the work level, you know, do I see myself in this company? And I think it's easy to have this broad message from top leaders, but a consistent track, a consistent conundrum with ESOP conferences and content and what you look online is, how do we have a good communications committee? How do we have good communication? How do we reach everybody? And so if you can make it where you're really intentionally keeping half of that learning at the work level, what I took from that is then it's that much more likely people could say, you know, I can make an impact today. I can make an impact next week because it's right here. And I see tangible, I hand it to my work to somebody. I receive my work from somebody versus getting too broad and getting too far into history and company values. All those things are really important, but it's that vexing conundrum of ownership culture is, how do you bring that home? So I don't want to be a Darth Vader of sorts, but I love going at the harder nuances. I love the trickier stuff. I'm starting to ask a little bit more is, you know, there is a lot of great goodness and joy with the employee owner movement and all of that that's going on. But at the same time, maybe swinging the lightsaber a little bit, what's the hard part? And, you know, what's that nuance? So that's my Darth Vader reference for you today. But I do find going to talk about those things, people are more willing, you know, and even at the conference, just saying, like, what are you struggling with? And we had a brand new ESOP. I'm like, I just can't get the communications committee off the ground. Or like, dude, maybe there are some differences, but in 16 years of fascination with this, it doesn't matter how big your ESOP is or how old it is. No one has figured it out. If it's going moderately well, please share with the rest of the ESOP world, because we have not figured it out. It is the Gordian knot.
Okay, but let me just pause for just a moment. And for those who are listening, we are recording on May the 4th. So May the 4th be with you. So thank you for the Darth Vader references. Well played, sir. Jesse, here's the thing. And I think you just referenced Corey Rosen sharing about humility. And for example, and I don't think I'm talking out of school here, you have done the podcast and you say things like what you just said. Hypotherm, rightfully, in my view, is a shining example of how to build culture, how to build engagement, how to build communication. And regularly you are saying, well, there's so much more we could do better. And I get that, but it seems to me that when you say that nobody's got it right, there is always room for improvement, but that's kind of the humility coming out, because there are a lot of companies that do it very well. But what seems to be the commonality is that they do it all the time, that the culture is very much top of mind and very much at the forefront of how companies operate. And to me, I'm always struck by the fact that, you know, someone occasionally will say, we don't have a culture at our company. Yeah, you do. Everybody has a culture. You know, maybe your culture is nobody cares. Nobody wants to improve. Everybody just wants to get through their shift and go home, but everybody has a culture.
Yeah, I think and a key thing from the conference was a reminder that you have to renew and renew and renew, and you have to keep sharing that information. I think there's a lot of room for us to do it. And every other ESOP I talked to felt the same way after, is that, are we hitting the right mediums to reach people? Is the serving size the right serving size? Technology plays into it. It gets very complicated. You know, we have folks on third shift manufacturing in the back of some of our facilities. That's not super easy to reach them. And so, do we reach everybody else and not reach them? Or do we keep trying? Do we change technology access, which is something we're trying to work on? So I think that, you know, I am confident with the open source, kind of open heart way that ESOPs work together. I think that whether, you know, we have an exemplary continuous improvement culture, systematized, normalized, you know, empowering, I think after all these years that any ESOP is still trying to figure it out. No one's got it down. I know we haven't. We do some things well, but it's fun to see some of the new voices and new approaches and new technologies and new strategies. Because, you know, what does it mean for somebody who's a year in? Maybe it's been a while since they've gotten some training or some contact. What is it like for the people that were, you know, 5, 7 years or more, 10 years or more? How do you kind of re-onboard them? How do you renew them? So I think it's kind of up to us in culture, definitely ownership culture, to never be satisfied. Maybe celebrate the wins when you have them, but you got to keep going because people are coming in, their work experience is changing, work is changing, the economy is changing. So I think it's something you just, if you want to be an employee-owned company, you got to have some people with some really durable people willing to keep going and keep going and keep going. It's like you're constantly tweaking it.
Now, contrast that, if you would, there's a difference between the folks who are like, it's not working. We need to do more. We need to, you know, we haven't gotten it yet. Contrast that with what Corey Rosen referred to as the negative geniuses, if you will.
Yeah, I love that. I've used it a few times. Just beware when you're trying to build culture, you're trying to build anything, the negative geniuses, the ones that are always have the, this is my interpretation. I'm not quoting Corey. So if I'm off track, I'll own it. But it was that person who always sort of pounces and throws in, that's not ever going to work. Brett, we tried that before. Now, Brett, we've tried that before. And this is why it's not going to work. Well, there's that potential, and you can't have a bunch of, you know, delusional cheerleaders that everything's going to be rah-rah and it's sunshine and bunny rabbits. I'm not saying that, but there has to be some balance. And I thought that was a great point, because I could actually think of a couple people that if I can find the right moment in time to offer feedback and have them be open to it, you know, there's an opportunity to maybe consider a balance, a little bit of the teeter-totter. I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts is, you know, the Dan Harris with 10% Happier. And one of his guests was saying that, you know, equanimity is you're like a kid and you're on the teeter-totter and you kind of watch each other and you find that balance and you have that, and it's sort of unspoken. And I think of that with sort of equanimity and balance. So that's what comes to mind.
When you talked about the folks who were like, that'll never work or what have you, it reminded me, and before I was a trustee, I was actually the CEO of an employee-owned company, about 50 employees for 2.5, 3 years. And man, it used to give me, we were in a transitioning industry where everything was really old school and it was time to modernize. And my least favorite words in business in any context is, but this is the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
You know? And to me, it's just part of that negative genius, you know, mentality of, you know, you got to shake things up. You got to try new things.
Yeah. And I mentioned this actually during my session with sort of change management, because we all have to change and change more quickly. And there's potential in ESOPs that people can get kind of comfortable. They've been there a long time and you have to just let the company you were familiar with, hopefully the values and the care stay and the trust, but you kind of have to, we have to pick up the pace and be more change seeking so we can stay open. You know, we can't keep things the way they were, they'd be closed. I got into a little bit of a uncharacteristically heated exchange with somebody saying it's just not the way it used to be. And I said, well, if it was, we'd be closed and I wouldn't be feeding my family and in working here. You know, so what you had built, what we have now, but dude, you got to let it go. You can have your memories, but don't try to deflate the now, because that time you had that might have been your sweetest memory got us here, and both of our houses are warm. It was in the winter we got in a fight. And I said, you know, an argument. And it's like, that's how it works. If we don't keep changing, the shares for us, I'm 52 years old. I got a few years out. If we don't keep figuring this out, none of us are cashing out. There's going to be nothing left. And that's not usually the kind of language that is associated with employee ownership culture and all of that. But I do think some of those conversations to break through, I think some of the overload in these times, I think, you know, it's important, you know, listeners can disagree and I respect that, but I think you have to sort of, you have to keep evolving and you can't hold the company back. If you're not happy, then you need to work somewhere else, or you can't get over it. You can work somewhere else. But the rest of us are trying to figure out the now and be ready for tomorrow and next week. And
I think, Jesse, and I've got 7 years on you, I think that, and I hear this a lot because I am fighting tooth and nail. I don't want to be that get off my lawn guy. And I hear things, an easy example, I hear things about young people today. They don't want to work. They're not respectful. They're blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh my Lord, that is what they said about my generation in the early 80s. Yeah. So when someone says, hey, it's not like how it used to be, I'm not being smart, but chances are back when it used to be, that's not how it was. We romanticize our memories, but we forget, oh my goodness, there are undoubtedly with hypertherm so many pivot points where things got a little bit dicey and bitten by the fingernails. And how are we going to get to whatever level, or any company, I'm not picking on hypertherm, but any company. And then, you know, you make it through the fire and you've got the feeling of making through the fire while forgetting that there was a fire.
Yeah. Well, it's in my onboarding, you know, it came up, it was just a fun group on Monday, and there were five, and not a usual first day topic, but I said, you know, I'm happy for you and your families that you started working at a company that so far has not had a layoff in 55 years. Things are concerning in the economy. And I hope that, you know, the goal of your day one is to, that you feel like you had a good experience and you want to double your tenure and come back tomorrow. But it's, there's some difficult waters. And as screwed up as this sounds, I've actually, and it's meant more for me to work at a successful employee-owned company when things were not going well. It's not that the fun times aren't great. It's the idea that we have a plan to deal with the undulations in the industrial economy, that we're a key player with plasma and water jet and software. But it's the idea that how people will pull together and rally. And even some folks that may have gotten a little, in my potentially harsh term, risk appearing or sounding a little too comfortable, maybe complacent, that really sharpens the pencil and gets people leaning in with eyes wide open to say, okay, all right, I really appreciate this more. And so it's a little counterintuitive, but when the economy has halted and there have been world events, those are the list of my favorite moments are in those times, not so much in the great times. And I think that's the difference of kind of at the core of the employee owner experience, and that you have some confidence. And when things get difficult, people are going to have your back and keep an eye on you. And we can go through that together. So to go to a slightly lighter topic, if you're game, I want to show just one simple idea from Web Industries. Michael Corey was sharing this in his presentation, and it's just so funny. And I sent it right away to Jane Moss, who leads our plan at work. They had a request for the certificates time. Some of their rank and file folks said, listen, it's too complicated. My family can't understand it. I'm not confident talking about it. Can you just have one side printed how much I got this year and how much the total is in big print so I can stick it on my fridge? And I'm really hoping we do that. I think everybody else in the room is like, aha, now I got an aha to go back to work with from the conference. And again, those lots of simple ideas are what culture is built on, what the work experience is built on. And I thought that was wonderful, where I think I can hold my own with a certificate and more culture, because I can hold my own with some of the technical. But I'm saying, if we don't get that done for next year, I'm going to just make my own and stick it on the fridge so my family can be happy with it. But I thought that was something that, you know, to share out with the community. If you can make a refrigerator magnet version of your share certificate, it taps into the, I think what's a huge opportunity for any employee-owned company is in further engaging the family and informing the family and making it meaningful for them. So those are some of the key things that jumped out at me at the conference.
So Jesse, all of the things have a common thread, which is how do we educate? How do we train? And you picked up some thoughts about gamify learning.
Yeah, that was a theme, big, loud, and clear theme through the sessions that I attended and conversations around them. And the way that I typed up my notes was that if lectures ever worked, they don't work now. And I don't remember who said it, but it was something close to that as a quote. And I just laughed out loud. And they said, if you don't have video modules about employee ownership, how an ESOP works, you're missing many of your workers. And I thought it was just very succinct, and I shared that back at the company. But it's the gamify. I want to go back to that point that you brought up, is make it engaging, make it palatable, make it attainable, make it reasonable, have it sound more like, this is my way of saying it, have some of the language be around more the way they speak their language, and so that you're not risking turning people off with financial terms. So that's a key thing. Gamify. I'm going to do that a little bit more with my sessions than I have in the past because of that. But then I think the other main theme that I really appreciated, and there was a lot of chatter around, was several different sessions talking about video modules for ESOP learning. And that was, I think, really the biggest culture topic. So I had a couple tips that I gleaned. I'm sorry, I can't give credit to each of the folks where I got this, but start with, what is everything we want them to know? And then some discipline to have 2 to 5 minute videos, 2 to 5 minutes in duration. And then the other thing, the tip that a couple different people said, is just film it with your iPhone or Samsung. Don't do a video camera. Don't do a big production. You can get free editing software. These don't have to be polished, and they're almost more palatable for people. If it looks a little more TikTok, looks a little bit more Instagram, looks homemade, looks company made, but you can skip a lot with that, and just keep them general. No sensitive company information. If they get out, they can be a brand boost. And then two groups we're talking about, send one video per month so that you can spread out ownership month over the year. A common thing is, among ESOPs, we do so much during October ownership month. How do we spread it through the year? And they said, just be intentional and send one a month. Some of the advice was, start with, we own this company, we own the buildings and land, then get to what's an ESOP, and then teach how the company makes money, and then build from there. And then one group had QR codes around campus so that folks, when they had Slack on the line in production or were walking by, could just do a quick scan and the video would come up. But then right after the video, there was a quick quiz. And then checking for understanding, from earlier in the conversation. And so what they did was, the first three employee owners to pass the video content quiz were entered in a raffle for EO swag to wear around. And so I think an obvious but undiscussed is the part of ownership culture that have large and small ESOPs I've talked to, is owners really like beating each other at things. They like competing. They like talking a little trash, having a little bit of fun and winning. So I thought this was a remarkably clever way to instill learning as something fun. The serving size is nice and small. They can see it on a company computer, or they can see it on their personal phone. They could watch it on a break. They could, I thought it was a very clever way to pierce through. So I hope my sharing this sort of melange of advice that I took helps other ESOPs that are listening.
So let's talk a little bit about action. It occurs to me that you make these videos and the suggestions are in terms of, passing them out to the company, et cetera, et cetera, but not including sensitive data. And there are two groups that had come to mind. And the first is, I did a mini cast last October about Henderson Engineers that did an ESOP wrap. And it was actually a wrapped video that they put on LinkedIn and social media. If people want to check it out at my website, www.esoppodcast.com, it was mini cast 207, but they did this wrap and they shared it with the world. And then another person who came to mind, who is a friend of both of us and our podcast, she's been on both of them, is Danny Green of ProAct. And yeah, Danny is doing site visits to other employee-owned companies and then recording a visit about who they met, what they learned, and what lessons from ESOPs that can be shared among everybody. And she's sharing them out in the public, allowing other companies to learn and perhaps incorporate them. So if companies begin and follow your advice and follow the advice given at the conference and start creating this content, drop it to the world, share it to the world. You'd be surprised at the feedback and the relationships you're going to build.
Yeah, and I absolutely. And Danny is awesome. ProAct is a great company. I actually got to see Danny in Kansas City and meet more of her team and some of her leadership. It was great to do that. But it was fun to see, after they came to visit us at Hypertherm Associates, and she dropped her vlog, the Salty Snacks. And I was thinking, that's what the next rising voices of ownership are going to be. Sarah Limoges, having her on from Admix, she was the employee owner of the year. And she's only, I think it was less than 2 years, she worked as an employee-owned company. And these are the voices that we can look to. It's not a duration game. Yes, it's a long-term game so we can get to retirement and have our wealth. But I think it's the most important for us to listen to the new voices coming in, the new techniques, the new skills, Danny and her vlog. I can't wait to see what grows out of that and the ideas shared. So it's a fun time. There's, I think it's it's a hard time for employee ownership messaging about the long-term game when people are having a hard time seeing next week for whatever reason going on with the economy, their family, whatever. So I think it's an opportunity to always honor the tenured voices and keep them engaged and keep them included. But if there's ever a time to listen to the next generation, I think the most important group right now to listen to is the new employee owners, the ones that are, you know, they can have amazing insights before they're actually participating in the plan. In our case, after 1 year, they can have amazing insights, you know, their second or third week, if you ask them. And to go back to just a closing comment before I wrap up, you know, smiling when you're talking about, you know, the youth and, you know, the kids these days in the workplace and everything. And what I've just sort of settled on is, as what I realized, I'm now a long timer at 16 years. I'm like, hey, so you were never young and wanted to conquer the world when you came out of school, high school or college? Like, did you like having the older generation ahead of you and they're two ahead of you thump on you just for showing up and being young? I don't want to live in a world where people won't come roaring out of high school or college wanting to change the world. We need them. And we used to be them. So stop being a jerk.
I love that, Jesse. And let me speak very selfishly. And I am not an employee owner. I haven't been in 10 years since I left the company that I referenced earlier. But you need the younger people to keep working to pay off those of you who will retire and move on. You need to keep the company going. So it is kind of the circle of life, man. Hakuna Matata, my friend.
The web episode where one of them said, we welcome new people. They're absolute precious gems because they're the ones who are going to keep the company going forward. And as they're thriving means that we can cash out and go on and get our fishing boats and pursue other things. I'm paraphrasing sloppily, but it was a wonderful thing of it's not the new voices aren't a threat. They're who we're going to be working for when we wrap up, hopefully mentoring them. You know, peer mentoring them and then enjoying the benefits of our labor. But yeah, if I could leave with a comment, I hope we can all encourage the new voices in employee ownership to rise up and give them an ear because they're bringing new tools, new ideas, and that can be a wonderful blend with the tenured voices and the foundational values and the way things used to be. Doesn't have to be a negative. Doesn't always have to be a negative. It's okay to look back on those and this is where we're from, but definitely welcome the new voices.
I love that, Jesse. And as we bring this to a close, and thank you for letting me come on your podcast and chat with you for a little bit. And again, I really just, you know, watched all of the social media posts, like wish I had been there. The NCEO does several major events each year. You were, and we were just talking about their annual conference. And then they have the NCEO Fall Forum coming up September 26th. Through the 28th, and this year it's going to be in Houston, Texas. And I think I can speak for both of us that we encourage everybody and get to an ESOP conference. In that sense, we are agnostic, you know, we don't take sides, et cetera, et cetera. But time after time after time, the NCEO conferences have been magical experiences for both of us and for every attendee. So we really hope that folks will consider joining the NCEO September 26th through the 28th. And as this episode is dropping, they're just opening their registration. Jamie Ovieta, who you mentioned, and her team did a great job of the annual conference, took a week off, and now they're already promoting the Fall Forum. So they're already back at it. Jesse, thank you so much for letting me come on and talk to you about it. I just know you had such a wonderful experience, and I'm honored that I was able to come on and help you share the story of everything that you picked up at the conference.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's been fun to chat. It's a lot more fun to have a two-way conversation, especially with your years and hundreds of episodes versus my just sort of trying to share out. It's hard to talk about a bunch of content you're excited if you're just talking into a recording. So it was a lot more fun to have the banter, but I'll just close with, you know, just the NCEO has been fantastic and a great resource. And just on a personal level, just a shout out to Jamie, to Dallin, to Lindsay, to Tim, to the whole team. Excellent job with the conference, and it's fun to see them on the rise. So congratulations for the progress that you've earned. So,
and Jesse, I know your focus is on rank and file, and I love that about you and the Owner to Owner podcast, but let's not forget Lauren Rogers.
Yes, I meant to say Lauren and Corey and the rest of the team. Yeah, they were always present. They were checking in with people. They asked me for some thoughts. They were talking to other people, always around, always available, always low-key. You know, it's presence, and that's what the staff did. Tim Garbinski and his crew. So yeah, shout out to the classy group. Great conference.
Jesse, this is your episode 42. We're coming up on the end of season two, and I just want to thank you. We have become really good friends over the last couple of years, but the work that you're doing is very important. The message that you're doing is very important, and I give myself the credit of having the idea of wanting an actual employee owner to talk to employee owners, and that's where this came from. But dude, you hit it out of the ballpark with every episode, and it's just a pleasure for me to be involved and a privilege for me to help distribute the work that you are doing to the world.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's just a joy to have a way to bring new voices. And, you know, it happened actually with recent guests, and like, well, I never thought I'd be on a podcast. And that's sort of become the tagline. That's who we're looking for. So I appreciate to you the opportunity. So as we wrap up, as I like to close the podcast, we want to encourage you to work employee owned, buy employee owned, travel employee owned, eat employee owned. It makes a difference. The money goes into your communities. It changes the wealth equity. It changes the worker experience. So wherever you can wander into a co-op or buy from employee owned in any form, we are cheering you on. Thanks for listening.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook at EO Podcast Network and on Twitter at ESOP Podcast. This podcast has been produced by Brett Kiesling for the EO Podcast Network. Original music composed by Max Kiesling. Branding and marketing by Bitsy Plus Design. And I'm Bitsy McCann.